Hello and welcome back to the Deep Dive. We are doing something a little different today. Usually we look at, broad concepts or big historical events, but today we are really getting our hands dirty with a specific piece of technical documentation. We're looking at a project with a title that is, frankly, a bit of a mouthful: videotoknowledge.maui frontend.
It doesn't exactly roll off the tongue, does it? Not like a marketing slogan.
Not at all.
But that's often where the best engineering is, it's
Right.
hiding behind these dry, descriptive titles.
Exactly. But once I got past that name and I started reading the source, the tagline hooked me immediately.
Oh yeah, what was it?
It promises camera to insight in seconds.
Okay, that is a bold claim.
Right. We aren't just taking pictures here. The document claims we are turning a static image into, and this is a quote, actionable knowledge instantly.
And doing it on a mobile device, in the field, that's the critical context here. We aren't talking about some massive server farm crunching data for 3 days. We're talking about a field worker, a smartphone, and an immediate answer.
So our mission today is to unpack this. We've got the full technical documentation for this application.
Right.
We're going to tear apart the architecture, the user experience decisions, and the code structure to understand how you build an app that bridges the physical world and AI.
It's a perfect case study. It covers the entire life cycle.
How so?
Well, we've got the problem definition. Why build this thing in the first place?
Yeah.
And the solution design, the deep technical architecture, and even a roadmap for where it goes next.
It's basically a blueprint.
It is a blueprint for a modern AI application.
Let's start exactly where the documentation starts then, the problem space. Why does this tool even need to exist? The source lists a few bullet points, but I think we need to really contextualize them to understand the pain. The first one listed is manual image review is slow and inconsistent.
This is the classic human-in-the-loop bottleneck. Think about an infrastructure inspector, maybe a warehouse manager, or an insurance adjuster.
Okay.
You go in the field, you look at 100 different pipes or shelves or dented fenders. By the 50th one, you're tired.
Yeah, you're losing focus.
You might be hungry.
Yeah.
You're thinking about your commute home. Your attention to detail just naturally degrades.
And the document explicitly says important details get missed.
Right.
And that's not like an accusation of incompetence. It's just biology, isn't it?
Precisely. It's cognitive load.
Yeah.
Humans are fantastic at spotting anomalies in a general sense,
Yeah.
but we're terrible at repetitive, detailed vigilance over long periods.
So if you're checking for rust on bolts.
And you see 10,000 bolts a week, you are going to miss some. That inconsistency is expensive, and in some industries, it's just plain dangerous.
And then there's the workflow aspect. The source lists fragmented workflows across devices. I feel like this is the bane of every enterprise environment I've ever seen.
It's the swivel chair problem.
Yeah, explain that.
You take a photo on your company phone because it has a good camera. Then you have to email it to yourself.
Yes.
Then you open your laptop, download the photo, open a spreadsheet or some reporting tool, and just type in what you saw.
So the data is basically trapped on the phone until you manually move it.
It creates friction, and friction is where data integrity goes to die.
So the solution to eliminate this friction and inconsistency is a cross-platform .NET MUI app. Now, for listeners who might be more on the business side, let's clarify what .NET MUI is.
Sure. So MAUI stands for Multi-Platform App UI. It's the evolution of the Xamarin framework, if anyone remembers that.
Okay.
The big promise here is write once, run anywhere. You write your code in C Sharp and .NET, and that single code base compiles into a native Android app, a native iOS app, a Windows app, and a Mac OS app.
Which is huge for enterprise development, right? You don't want to hire a Swift team for the iPhones and then a Kotlin team for the Androids just for an internal tool.
Exactly. It unifies the development stack. One team, one language, and you reach every device your workforce might be carrying.
And the core mechanic here, the magic trick of the app, is described in the source as capture images plus prompt implies AI vision.
I love that phrasing, implies AI vision. It suggests the camera isn't just a recording device anymore. It's an input mechanism for intelligence.
That is a significant shift, isn't it? In the old world, a camera captures pixels.
Right.
In this architecture, the camera captures context.
Right. You aren't just saving a JPEG to a hard drive. You are sending a query. Here's what I see. Tell me X. And the documentation emphasizes this happens fast on any device.
Let's walk through the user experience, the capture flow, because I think the design decisions here tell us a lot.
Yeah.
The source maps it out in four steps. Step one, take or select photo. Standard stuff. You're either snapping a fresh picture or grabbing one you took earlier.
And step two is where it gets interesting. Edit prompt, optional.
Yeah, let's dig into that. Why is there a prompt step? Why not just send the picture and have the AI figure it out?
Because insight is subjective.
What do you mean?
If I take a picture of a car, what do I want to know? Do I want the make and model? Do I want to know if the tire is flat? The license plate number? Is it parked illegally?
Ah, I see. So the image is just the raw data, but the prompt is the filter.
Exactly. By letting the user edit the prompt, you turn the app from a generic image tagger into a specific investigative tool.
So it could default to describe this picture, but I could change that.
You could change it to, is there corrosion on this valve? Or count the number of red boxes. It gives the user agency over the AI.
And then step three, send to AI, followed by step four, the result is saved, a very linear, frictionless loop.
And that saved part is key. It doesn't just show you the answer and then it vanishes. It's logging it.
Which circles back to the problem of fragmented workflows.
Exactly. The data and the insight are stored together immediately.
Speaking of the interface, the UX highlight section in the doc is surprisingly detailed for a technical doc. Mm. It mentions things like consistent blue-filled buttons and large readable typography. It sounds basic, but why emphasize this?
Because engineers, we often forget it. If you're building a tool for a field worker, large readable typography isn't an aesthetic choice. It's an accessibility requirement.
Right.
If I'm standing in bright sunlight, or in a dimly lit basement, or I'm wearing safety glasses that might fog up, I cannot be squinting at 10-point text.
True. If the tool is hard to read, people just won't use it. They'll go back to pen and paper.
And the whole project fails.
Right.
And the blue-filled buttons, that's about affordance. Mm-hmm. You need to know instantly what's clickable and what's just text.
It reduces cognitive load.
Yes. You don't want the user thinking about how to use the app. You want them thinking about the job they are doing.
There's one feature here that I absolutely love. It mentions a busy indicator prevents duplicates.
The anti-rage click feature.
We've all done it. You hit submit. Nothing happens for like half a second, so you just hit it five more times to be sure.
And suddenly your database has six identical records, you've burned through your API credits, and the back end is clogging up.
Right.
By implementing a clear, visual, busy status spinner, a grayed out button, the app is communicating. It's saying, I got it, I'm working, please hold. It builds trust.
The document also mentions a light dark aware UI. Again, this feels standard for consumer apps, but for enterprise tools, it's often overlooked.
And it's critical for safety. If you're on a night shift, checking security perimeters, you do not want a blinding white screen ruining your night vision.
And the opposite in the sun.
Exactly. In high noon sun, dark mode might be unreadable due to glare. The app adapting to the environment is key.
Let's pivot to under the hood. This is where we get into the real architecture. The appendix lists the framework as .NET 8 MIUI. That's the absolute latest iteration, right?
It is. It implies long-term support and all the latest performance improvements. It's a solid foundation.
And under UI logic, it specifies main page plus main view model.
Okay, so this signals the MVVM pattern, model view view model. This is the bread and butter of this kind of development.
Okay, break that down for us. Why do we care about MVVM?
Imagine a restaurant.
Yeah.
The viewer is the table. And the menu, what you interact with.
Mm-hmm.
The model is the ingredients in the fridge, the raw data. The view model is the waiter.
Okay.
The waiter takes the order from the table, goes to the kitchen, gets the food, and brings it back.
And you don't want the chef coming out to cook the steak at your table every single time.
Exactly. If you mix the logic, the cooking, with the UI of the table, your code becomes a mess. Spaghetti bowl.
So separating them makes it maintainable.
And testable. You can test the logic independently at how pretty the buttons are.
That makes a lot of sense. Now, hardware integration. The list mentions camera.maui and community toolkit.
These are NuGet packages, so external libraries.
Is that a good thing? Relying on third-party code for a core feature?
In this context, absolutely. Writing raw camera code for Android is a nightmare. Doing it for iOS is a different nightmare.
I can imagine.
Camera.maui abstracts all that complexity away. It follows the principle of don't reinvent the wheel. The goal here is camera to insight, not write a camera driver from scratch.
Smart. Now, the most critical part, in my opinion, is how it talks to the outside world. It lists a REST client to OpenAI proxy.
Proxy is the key word there. That's the most important word in that whole sentence.
Why? Why not just have the app talk directly to OpenAI? Seems simpler.
Security. This is the number one rule of mobile development. Never trust the client.
Okay.
If you put your OpenAI API key directly inside the mobile app code, someone will decompile that app. They will find your key, and they will start using your account to generate memes or whatever on your dime.
That sounds like an expensive mistake.
It's a career-ending mistake in some places. The proxy means the phone sends the image to a server you control.
Your server.
Your server. It holds the secret keys, it authenticates the user, maybe checks a quota, and then it forwards the request to the Vision endpoint.
So the proxy is like the bouncer at a club.
It is. And it lets you swap out the AI provider later without updating the app.
Oh, that's clever.
Today it's OpenAI, tomorrow it's Anthropic, you just change the proxy config. The mobile app never knows.
The doc also mentions configurable timeout and base URL.
That's a nod to real-world reliability.
How so?
Mobile networks are flaky. Sometimes you're on 5G, sometimes you have one bar of 3G in a concrete basement.
Right.
If your timeout is hard-coded to, say, 5 seconds, the app will fail constantly in slow conditions. Being configurable means an admin can bump that up to 30 or 60 seconds for workers in rural areas.
It's acknowledging that the happy path of perfect internet isn't the only path.
Exactly. Robust software handles the unhappy path gracefully.
This leads us nicely into the security, privacy, and reliability section. The privacy stance here is interesting. It says, no analytics or trackers.
Which is almost unheard of in consumer apps these days.
Tell me about it. You download a flashlight app, and it wants your contacts and location.
Right. This is different because it's an enterprise or open source mindset. No analytics means we aren't spying on you, and camera access only on demand means the app isn't recording in the background. It builds trust.
On the reliability front, we talked about timeouts, but there's also mention of a reusable HTTP client. Is that a performance thing?
It is, and it's a specific nuance of the .NET framework.
Explain it to me like I'm five.
Okay. Creating a new connection to a server is expensive for the system. It takes time to do the handshake, set up the encryption.
Like opening a heavy door every time you want to shout one word outside.
Perfect analogy. If you open the heavy door, say one word, close it, and then open it again for the next word, you're wasting a huge amount of energy.
So a reusable HTTP client just keeps the door propped open.
Exactly. It manages the connections efficiently. If you don't do that, you can run into something called socket exhaustion.
Which sounds bad.
It is. The device literally runs out of ways to talk to the network. The app becomes sluggish and eventually crashes.
So the fact that this is called out in the documentation shows that whoever built this knows their stuff.
Correct. It shows a maturity in the engineering.
So we have a solid foundation, great UI, secure architecture, robust networking. But software is never really finished, is it?
Never.
The roadmap section gives us a glimpse into the future. First item is a big one, offline queue and retry.
This is the holy grail for field apps.
Because right now, based on what we just discussed, if I have no internet, the app is basically a brick.
Right. It relies on that proxy connection. The offline queue changes that whole paradigm. It means I can go into a dead zone, a subway tunnel, a server room, take the photo, write the prompt, and hit send.
And the app just saves it locally.
Yes. And then the moment you walk back into signal range, the app detects the connection and flushes the queue. It processes everything in the background. It's often called the store and forward pattern.
That completely solves the fragmented workflow problem for good.
It decouples the user's action from the network's availability. It makes the tool truly resilient. It's harder to build, but it's a vastly better experience.
The roadmap also lists export share history.
This addresses the data silo problem from the other end. Great, I have the insight on my phone, but my boss needs it.
Or the compliance team needs it.
Right. Export lets me turn that data into a JSON file, a PDF, an email. It unlocks the value of the data.
And finally, accessibility and theming options.
We mentioned the large typography, but full accessibility means supporting screen readers for visually impaired users, high contrast modes. It's about ensuring any employee can use the tool effectively.
So when we step back and look at this entire document, what's the big picture here? What's the narrative?
I think we're seeing the commoditization of AI vision.
How do you mean?
5 years ago, building this would have required a team of PhDs in computer vision, a massive backend, months of training custom models.
Right.
Today, it's a .NET MAUI shell wrapping an API call. The barrier to entry has just collapsed.
It's democratization. You don't need to be a tech giant to build a tool that can see.
Exactly. And the focus has shifted from how do we make the computer see to how do we integrate this site into a human workflow? The hard part is no longer the AI.
The hard part is the UX, the offline queuing, the security.
The blue buttons.
Yeah.
The wrapping is now more important than the engine because the engine is a commodity you can just rent.
That is a fascinating takeaway. The tech is assumed. The implementation is what makes it special.
100%.
Yeah.
The value is in the seconds and the reliability, not just the raw algorithm.
I want to leave you with one final thought, something to chew on. We talked about the roadmap mentioning offline queuing because the internet might be down.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, the AI is still in the cloud. It's on that proxy server or over at OpenAI.
Right.
But we're seeing the rise of edge AI.
Yeah.
Small, powerful models that run directly on the chips in modern phones.
That is the next frontier.
So what happens to this camera to insight loop when the AI moves from the cloud directly onto the device?
Well, the seconds in the tagline becomes milliseconds.
You remove the network latency entirely.
You remove the privacy risk of sending data to a server. You remove the cloud costs.
And you remove the need for that offline queue because you're always online with yourself.
It becomes a true bionic extension of the user's senses. It's instant. That is a future I'm very excited to see. And architectures like this are the stepping stones to getting there.
It is a wild time to be building software. We've unpacked the video-to-knowledge.net MAUI front end, from the blue buttons to the proxy security, and hopefully given you a better sense of how these tools come together.
It was a pleasure. Always check your architecture and keep your API keys secure.
Sound advice. Thanks for listening to this deep dive. We will catch you on the next one.
Keep learning.